So for the final speaker in this session, I'd like to bring up Carl Campbell with Island Conservation, and he's going to talk about CRISPR gene drive and RNAi applications for rodent eradication.
Thanks, Tess. Up here today representing a consortium essentially that has been put together over the last 4 to 5 years now, and basically here to update you on some of the more recent advances that we've had and also the process that's sort of here and underway. Also here looking to try and broadly cover these aspects and provide a sort of a, you know, where is the status of this at present. So islands globally represent around 5% of the Earth's surface area, made up of around 180,000 or so odd islands, you know, but they're home to around 40% of endangered species on the planet. In the last 500 years, more than 80% of all extinctions have occurred here. About 60 to 80% of all of those extinctions occurred because of invasive species. So a really disproportionate amount of extinctions and current endangerment occurring on islands because of invasive species. Okay? Take home message: if you want to prevent extinctions, work on islands. If you want to prevent extinctions on islands, work on invasive species. There's been about 1,100 successful invasive alien mammal eradications over the history so far. Work that's done to provide a real mega data sort of look at this has resulted essentially in that by and large, vast majority of cases as a result in native species recovery being extremely positive. One of these examples, in 2012, I worked and led a team in the Galapagos Islands with the Galapagos National Park Service and Island Conservation, where we removed black rats off the island of Pinzon. After that, for the first time in 150 years, the Pinzon giant tortoise was able to breed successfully in the wild. So if we look a bit more globally and have a look at, well, you know, what sort of impact or, you know, how impactful and what can we do, we see that four species only of invasive rodents are impacting around 88% of all critically endangered and endangered vertebrate species on islands. Okay, so just a few species having massive impact. However, our current methods, you know, are really not that feasible. So if we're pretty exaggerating it actually, and we take sort of around 1,000 people on islands and 30,000 hectares as our cutoff, we're able to only work and potentially prevent extinctions for around 15% of that. So our current methods have really maxed out. So we, taking all this under consideration, we thought, well, okay, let's mount an innovation strategy. And our innovation strategy on this was essentially identify the greatest point of impact, which was these invasive rodents. And then look to match the technology to this need. And we did that through a horizon scanning exercise that took a couple of years and involved a fairly broad number of people and an increasing number. As we found experts in the field and were able to dive down into aspects, we increased basically that. And then we published in 2015 a paper on this. We then looked to select investments. So once you have the list, essentially, that the horizon scanning was able to do, we're able to then pick, well, which of these may be really good investments? Which of these may actually be able to resolve some of this? And we were able to categorize things into aspects of whether incremental, can they do things a little bit better than what we're currently doing it today, or is it transformative? Is it a massive leap forward that may actually allow us, for example, to get towards the rest of those 85% of islands? One of the aspects that popped out was gene drives, and genetic tools overall really popped out within this horizon scan as being major potential opportunities. So we started to think, well, we better be having a closer look at this. So gene drives, what are they? Gene drives cause genes to be inherited more frequently than normal, and potentially up to 100%. Requires sexual reproduction to be passed on, so this is through inheritance. And it really provides us for the first time almost ever, basically the ability to modify wild populations by design, okay? So we're able to either replace them, which means that we can change out genes that are currently in the population, or we can suppress or even eradicate populations depending on which genes are basically inserted and carried by these gene drives. CRISPR-Cas9 really made this come from actually a pipe dream and aspects of attempting to harness naturally occurring gene drives to actually here having a synthetic gene drive that was really easy to use. But CRISPR-Cas9, and there's often, let's say, some misinterpretation on this, CRISPR-Cas9 in itself is a gene editing tool. Okay, so it's a bacterial immune response that has been harnessed to be able to essentially provide editing ability on genes, and has been extremely efficient. When that, as a pair of scissors, for example, as you can see here, is then actually inserted into the organism and is used, that is then able to go across and use that gene editing power to basically act as a gene drive. And what you end up with is, on the far side, is the genes that come from one parent end up actually being in all offspring. So as you can see on the bottom here, what you end up with, and the pretty little blue mice in this case, are the gene drive carrying ones, and the one with pink ears are the wild type. And in the end, what you end up with is all blue mice. However, this is a fast moving and nascent field, okay? Recently, excellent report published by the National Academy of Sciences looking at this, and they're really looking at the, you know, the key recommendation that came out of that was precaution and phased approaches are needed, okay? And the work that's going on, the work that we're doing, is undertaking very seriously these recommendations. So the project that we're working on, now termed Genetic Biocontrol Invasive Rodents Program, it's made up of a consortium of different partners from universities, government agencies, and one non-government organization being ourselves. So there we're actually looking at two different gene drives. One is a naturally occurring in mice gene drive, which is the T complex. Texas A&M is working on this. And the other is synthetic aspects with CRISPR-Cas9, and that's at University of Adelaide in Australia. However, in this, you need, if you have a gene drive alone doesn't do anything. Okay, so you actually need to, what genes are you going to put on that? What genes are going to be carried by that gene drive? So the genes that we're looking at and are interested in moving through, we're actually looking at creating a sex bias throughout the population so that the population would then basically peter away after being all male in origin, and essentially you would end up with the population dying out. The two specific genes that we've looked at targeting are considered to be master switches within this. So the SRY and SOX9 genes are considered to be master switches and essentially determine whether females or males are going to be produced. There's a whole suite of aspects, though, that we're looking at within this. It's not as simple, and as you saw in the presentation before, it's not all just about technical aspects. There's a whole suite of aspects that need to be undertaken. And I just want to sort of point out here the aspects related, for example, to ethics that requires a suite of coordination and is, you know, really underpinning sort of the work that we're doing. You know, control mechanisms. We're looking at a suite of different control mechanisms. And other groups are looking at other types of control mechanisms. And when I say control mechanisms, these are mechanisms, for example, that allow you to be able to safely deploy and basically target specific geographic or genetically restricted areas, basically identifying then those populations, for example, from naturally occurring populations or other populations. One aspect with this, gene drives alone may be able to carry through some of this aspect. But in this, we're trying to look for as many unfair advantages, essentially, as we can, because the scale of this problem is absolutely huge. to some of the aspects that within our program is being looked at of this aspect of, you know, really trying to leverage biology here. And I'll use the case here for Isle of May, which is an island in the Orkneys. Had a population of around 1,000 house mice that had been introduced. About 42 male and 35 female mice were introduced from another island. None of these are genetically modified, they're just normal mice, but you're able to track basically genes within these. After 18 months of those being there, all mice trapped across the island were hybrids. Okay, so really quickly, these new mice that were introduced were able to invade essentially this population and convert that population into hybrids. And males were really disproportionately basically responsible for this invasion. And that's pretty logic if you think about it. One male is able to inseminate many females. Females are only able to get inseminated once and then have to go through reproduction. So the aspect with this is really looking at, okay, well, let's leverage then this aspect of biology and promiscuity. And what we're working there, John Godd from North Carolina State University is actually working to attempt there to basically look to rank various mouse populations and how different populations may be able to invade other populations. When you can do that, you can then pick which mice would be the mice that you would release on an island and already give them an unfair advantage to be able to get out the gene drive. I'll touch very briefly on aspects of RNA interference. This is one of the other aspects that came up within the horizon scanning exercise that we undertook. So RNA interference, RNAi, as it's often referred to. What happened here, or the mechanism, just to explain that quickly, normally have single-stranded RNA. However, when you get double-stranded RNA inside a cell, basically elicits an immune response. A double-stranded RNA that matches this single-stranded is then destroyed, along with a single-stranded. So what you're able to do then is actually where that single-stranded RNA that's inside the cell controls life function, for example, within that cell, you're then able to actually have potentially a species-specific toxicant, potentially, through the use of this double-stranded RNA. So it's undergoing, you know, a huge body of research is undergoing this, particularly in invertebrate pest control. But there are other aspects, and one of the most commonly used models, at least animal models, is mice, and it's being looked at a lot in mice as an animal model for potential cures for disease, particularly cancers. So, interestingly, these double-stranded RNA can be synthesized chemically, and we can really look to potentially use some of these as taxa-specific biopesticides. They can also be synthesized biologically, okay? So you can think, so this is, you know, species can produce these as well. So there, you may be able to use different plants or animals as actually vectors of this for specific species. However, with vertebrates, it's not quite as simple as it is with invertebrates. And one of the aspects here is that vertebrates digest RNA very effectively. So here, one of the aspects that's been looked at, and this is basically coming out of the medical field where they're looking at oral delivery for people typically, but using mice as models, is that they're the most promising sort of carriers to be able to get across that sort of digestive tract and to the cells that are being targeted is actually through the use of nanoparticles. And here you can basically coat, if you will, the double-stranded RNA, and it then passes to the cells that you're actually looking at to target. So just wrapping up here, the aspect of gene drives and RNAi, they may potentially, you know, be some pretty good power tools, if you will, in the toolbox. But the cautious investigation of these opportunities, you know, is really required and is paramount. The big picture, stepping right back on this, is essentially what we're trying to do is reduce aspects of risks and increase aspects of impact. Thank you.
Again, time for maybe one question.
Hi, great presentation. I just want to clarify that is the stance that Island Conservation is taking that global gene drives should not be released, but that we should be making systems that are localized gene drives or like localized with a lot of different barriers to make sure that it doesn't spread past where it shouldn't go?
Correct. So just to expand on that, so terminology for those of you that may not be familiar, global gene drives are essentially an aspect that doesn't have any control or limits on it. So the potential that, you know, one potential, in this case mouse or mosquito potentially in other cases, could get out and that one single individual could then spread its genes throughout the entire population across the entire world and you wouldn't have any mice anymore. In other places, for example, mice are native. So they're actually very important in certain ecosystems and other things. To answer your question directly, yes, we're very interested. We're working with a suite of different mouse genomics people that are basically doing editing work. And we're looking there at a suite of different methods that may potentially work to be able to put controllability basically on these tools. So this is one of the aspects, if you will, that's currently a limitation. But just to put it into perspective, this field, so CRISPR wasn't really known about, or at least was not harnessed as a gene editing tool until around 2012. At the end of 2014, start of 2015, landmark paper theorizing the aspect of utilizing CRISPR as these pair of scissors as a gene drive. Now, basically, as of today, there's essentially four gene drives that have been produced in laboratory situations utilizing CRISPR as a gene drive tool. And so this is a very fast, you know, very fast moving aspect. We do not have all the answers at present. I mean, anybody that is going to tell you that they do, I would leave that conversation pretty quickly.
It's one other question. J.D. Hansen from the International Center for Technology Assessment. Very good that you cite the National Academy Gene Drive Report. What the National Academy Report says is we're not ready to release these into the environment at all. Lab work could go on, they said, but we shouldn't be releasing anything out there. Given that there's already a problem with wild-type mice getting into laboratories and impregnating genetically engineered mice, how do you do this even in the lab and make sure it doesn't get out?
Aspects of containment on this. Essentially, there was a paper produced by a suite of people that were working on this in around 2015. That actually reviewed the types of biocontainment that occurs at facilities, and they provided some recommendations that were related to around different types, so not just physical containment, but also genetic containment. Some of the work that's going on in labs that are associated within our program actually use basically specific markers that are put on mice that are lab mice, and the gene drives can only work on those. So they're the landing site, if you will. Without that marker, which is only in those lab mice that's been artificially put in, it doesn't work. So these are ways, that's just an example, but frequently what you're doing is using multiple aspects of biocontainment, not just physical. So I think what you're referring to is just physical aspects, but I'm happy to be corrected.